Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. I am Laura.
And I'm Marty. Good and thing, huh?
I know. It's really important that people, you know, can tell us apart. So that's... It's the glasses. Now, blonde and glasses and of a certain age. I mean, like, you know.
Got it.
All right. So today, everybody, children, we are going to discuss the top 10 reasons that pets, in this case, dogs, go to the vet. We're going to do cats next week. Top 10 reasons. This is like, I feel like we're on Letterman or something. Should I be like throwing, you know, like a nip, like a card, right? Wasn't that a thing? Okay.
It was a thing.
So tell us, what's the number one reason that pets go to the vet? Dogs.
If you look at the top 10, depending on whose list you look at, and you put the top three together, it's allergies and skin disease, ear infections, and benign lumps in the skin.
So I think I just want to note, can I just say for the record, it's a good thing the Marty and Laura Show exists because we've covered every one of these topics in the last year and a half.
We have, in pretty good detail. But I think it's kind of interesting to see how frequently these are reasons that people come in with their pets. And it may not be that they just come in for that, but it may be that while you're at the vet for a routine visit for vaccines or a heartworm test or surgery or whatever it happens to be, you're like, and by the way, let's take a look at this. I mean, skin's a big deal. It is absolutely the number one reason that pets visit the veterinary clinic, both dogs and cats. Well, first of all, skin is kind of a big deal. It's like the largest organ in your body.
Right.
So people don't always think of skin as being an organ, but it is the largest organ in the body. And what do we do when we touch our pets, pet our pets, you know, do whatever with them? It's skin. It's skin all the time. They're shedding. They're not shedding. They're blowing coat. They're developing lumps. They have scratching, itching, biting, licking, chewing.
Hot spots. And a lot of God only knows.
Yeah. And then ears are just skin down in a tube. They're not unique structures. They're just skin that doesn't have air circulating that allows wax and hair and other stuff to accumulate down in this skin tunnel.
You, every time you say ears are a skin tube, my head just spins like Exorcist, you know.
But it's true, is that it's not a unique organ. It's all part of the skin. So it's just a continuation down into the canal. So when dogs have allergies, oftentimes they do have an ear infection. And oftentimes the ear infection is the first thing that we'll see when a dog does come in for a skin problem. So they travel hand in hand. And I think it's important that people identify that that's just another part of it. Now, some dogs will end up with ear infections because they went to the groomer and water got on their ear, or they went swimming and water got in their ear. But a normal ear canal should be able to handle that. It should just be that the dog shakes its head. Have you ever watched those videos? I love these videos when the dog is shaking in slow motion.
The hair and the water. And, yeah.
And the slow motion, and part of their skin is going one direction and then the part of it's going another. It's so interesting how their body and their skin, If you've never done that, watch a video of dog shaking in slow motion. Like the front and the back half of their body.
I'll have to have one in the YouTube. We'll put one in.
Yeah, because the front and back of their body go the same direction, but the middle of their body goes a different direction at the same time. It's fascinating. It's right up there with watching a dog drink water out of a clear bowl from underneath.
Right.
Fascinating studies.
Their tongue goes backwards.
And flips water up into their mouth, which is completely not a reason that dogs go to the vet. But nevertheless, it's a fascinating and engaging study. So it's really pretty fun to watch. So if you have nothing else to do some night and you're sitting at your computer, just put in those search words on YouTube or on AI and you'll see some. I mean, it's fascinating. It's not icky or gross or anything. It's just fascinating.
No, we could sit there and, you know, scroll through funny pet videos all night. TikTok is there for a reason, y'all. Okay.
Yeah.
So top three, You know, one of the things that I think we could talk about real quick on the topic of ear infections being one of the top three, and in following along all the various things that we've talked about in the last month or two about how to save yourself money, not have to have so many trips to the vet, we could do a quick discussion of how you clean your dog's ears, because we haven't done that. So what are your favorite products? How do you keep your dog's ear clean? Your dog with a German Shepherd with big upright ears probably is a different concern than your Basset Hound, right? Mm-hmm. And so let's talk really quick through that, and we'll go back into the list of some of the other things that people go to the vet for.
So it's kind of interesting that you picked German Shepherd, because German Shepherd is the only dog with an upright ear that has frequent ear infections. Almost all the other dogs, almost all the other dogs that we see ear infections in are drop-eared dogs.
Right.
So it's going to be the Bassets, the Cockers, the Retrievers, all the dogs with a dropped ear. And if you think about dogs, like if you really think about dogs, and I think about dogs a lot because this is what I do, is when they use dogs for search and rescue, when they use dogs to go work crowds. We were in Atlanta yesterday where the soccer teams were, and we saw a dog working the Egyptian soccer team's bus before they loaded the bus to look for explosives. They're drop-eared dogs frequently now because those dogs don't look as scary to the general public. So German Shorthairs, Springer Spaniels, Labradors, you know,
you go to a couple wire hairs.
Right. You go to the football games, you go to these kind of events, and many of the dogs are drop-eared dogs, because the upright-eared dogs are scarier looking. But in general, the German Shepherd is the rare exception to most dogs with ear infections are the drop-eared dogs, not the erect-eared dogs. So Corgis, Sammies, a lot of those dogs, cropped dogs, dogs with ear crops like Dobermans and Danes, they typically don't have ear infections because the ear is erect and there's not the moisture and debris accumulation that you get in a drop-eared dog. But there is a component of allergies as well. And of course, German Shepherds do have more allergies than a lot of the other breeds. So important that you think about that. How do you clean their ears? I use a gentle ear cleaner. I don't use alcohol that can burn. If you have a sore ear, a raw ear surface, you'll never touch your dog's head again. I don't use peroxide. I use some of the really gentle ear cleaners, and I will put some of that down in the ear canal, preferably when you're outdoors on a nice day, not in the winter. You can put some in, let them go out and run around, and then you can flush the ear and get some of the debris out. You can use a nice bulb syringe and do some of that and then let the dog shake their head. I do it outside because once you do it inside, I try to take all the dogs that I flush ears on outdoors at the clinic because it's just a lot easier than peeling stuff off the walls in the cabinets when they're done shaking their head with all that debris in there. So you can do a nice job of flushing the ear, and it's not going to hurt to get water in the ear of most dogs if they have a normal ear canal. If they already have an ear infection, so my rule of thumb is if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So if your dog doesn't have ear problems, don't start flushing them. Get them used to having ears touched when they're babies so that they'll let you, but don't start flushing ears on a dog if it doesn't need it. If it does have ear infections, it's sort of like skin disease. If your dog has allergies, you can practically not bathe them enough. You're probably not going to overbathe them. But a normal dog, you can overbathe. And the same with this is don't do something with the ear canal unless you have a reason to. Even the dogs with haired ear canals, the dogs that have continuous growing coat that need to go to the groomers, like the Shih Tzus, the Schnauzers, the Poodles, a lot of those dogs really don't need a lot done with their ears. Everybody gets excited about pulling the hair out of their ears, but typically a normal dog without allergies isn't going to need much done about that either. And if it bothers you to have hair in the ear canals, or your groomer thinks it bothers them, or your veterinarian says this dog has got ear infections because of the hair in the ear canal, you can pull it. But you know my favorite trick for this.
I know. The Nair. That's crazy.
Nair. You can use Nair.
Here's my pro tip to go with her pro tip. If you're going to do the very gentle face cream that we use on our faces with the Nair, test a tiny spot on your dog's ear to make sure that it's not going to cause them. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But Nair does a good job of removing hair from the ear canals if you need to do it. But if it ain't broke, don't fix it is kind of my bottom line answer to that. So I just throw a towel over their head, do the flush, then let them shake. Just jump back. I'll have a client outside with the dog and a technician, and I'll be, okay, hold on. So the tech is holding onto the dog's head so it doesn't shake. We flush both sides. And then I'm like, okay, everybody jump back. Because then as soon as the dog shakes, everyone gets showered. So it's going to include earwax and all kinds of other lovely debris. So I try to give people a warning before we shake.
And we'll put some links to your favorite products, because these are all products in most cases that you can buy over the counter.
Right. There's some really good ones out there. The other thing I like a lot is the Silver Honey products. Those are, again, products that you can buy without a prescription. They're a combination of Manuka honey and silver sulfadiazine, which is antibacterial. So those are good products down in the ear canal as well. And Zymox is another good one that you can get over the counter. So those are all things you can get. The weird thing about Silver Honey is we're used to most creams and ointments looking white. Mm-hmm. And this particular product looks gray. So don't let that freak you out, because that's what it looks like when they mix these two together. Mm-hmm. So that's a normal color for that product. If you buy a new tube of it and you're like, it's supposed to be that color. Yeah, that's absolutely fine. But if you do have ear infections, and anytime your dog has earwax or your cat has earwax, they have an ear infection. Normal dogs and normal cats should not have earwax in their ear canals. Ferrets and children have earwax. Dogs and cats should not. So if you're cleaning the ears and you're getting earwax out, you need to go to the vet and talk to them. Go in and get some ear medication. They're going to want to see the dog. Maybe do a cytology and see if it's bacteria, yeast, or both. Maybe it's mites. So you want to make sure that you are getting an appropriate treatment for that patient so that you can get rid of the ear infection, because a normal dog should not have wax in their ear canal. When you put a cotton swab in, and I don't recommend that people try to swab their dog's ears up with Q-tips, because all you do is pack the material down in there. You're not likely to hit the eardrum with a Q-tip, but you're just packing the wax down in. So that's why flushing has the advantages. But if you're getting gunk out of your dog's ear, you need a veterinary appointment. Take your dog to the vet.
Very good. So when you snuggle your dog on the couch and they shove their ear in your nose and you go,
smells bad.
Look in there and it's black and gooey. Time to go to the vet.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You can flush it until you can get in, but you're going to need a veterinary appointment, guaranteed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. So there you go. Keep an eye on your dog's ears at home. And
the nose on your dog's ears, because you'll smell it.
Yes. That's actually because you'll get you a little gaggy. yes, that's definitely the best.
Well, you're a delicate flower.
I am a delicate flower. We knew that all along.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
Okay, you guys. Dog breeding is more than a hobby. At its best, it's an all-consuming quest to create something lasting and beautiful in the world. We are super excited to announce that the groundbreaking series Pedigrees to Pups is now streaming live on Doggett. Dr. Marty Greer and I teamed up to offer a complete 360-degree mentoring experience. We're blending advanced reproductive science with that intuitive breeder's eye. You can stream the series today on your Doggett app. If you're unsure, visit puredogtalk.com to get connected. You can answer the call to pursue that one impossible thing. The chance to preserve, protect, and improve something that truly matters. That's in the top three. What are our next tier? What else are people going to the vet with their dog for?
So then we have sometimes some hot spots, which again go with the same thing. Then we can have a lot of GI disease and dental disease. So we have upset stomach, enteritis, nice words for diarrhea.
Bad puppy.
Vomiting and diarrhea. And dogs don't mind vomiting. You know, humans don't like to vomit. It really upsets them. Mm-hmm. Dogs are like, yeah, no big deal. I'll just throw up and then I'll eat it again. It's
and
okay.
And then I'll eat it again. Yeah, no, it's great. Yeah, why do they do that? Okay, answer like the most important veterinary question you're going to get today. Why? My 5-month-old puppy, he's just laying in his crate doing nothing. He's hanging out with me. Blech. Like, what? Why? What are you doing?
Because if they get a little upset stomach, they just do. So why do dogs eat grass? I don't know. Because it tastes good? Because they don't have enough green stuff in their diet, so feed them more lettuce and spinach? I don't know. Let them eat asparagus and broccoli. It's all cool. But yeah, dogs don't mind vomiting. And if you look at any prescription or non-prescription medication for a dog, even if it's injectable, even if it's topical, what are the top two side effects? Vomiting and diarrhea. Mm-hmm. Even if you didn't put it in their mouth, you gave it by injection, they still get vomiting and diarrhea because they're dogs. And every single thing that gets reported as an adverse event, if it happens, it has to be reported.
Right.
So it could be completely unrelated to the drug that was given.
Right.
But if it happened during the clinical trial, then it has to be reported as an adverse event. That's just the way it goes. If your dog got hit by a car during the clinical trial, it gets reported as an adverse event. So it has nothing to do with it,
but God.
It still gets reported. Well, okay, here's an example. This is way off topic, but I'm going to do it anyway. There was a study done with the human papillomavirus vaccine, HPV vaccine, that they started to give to teenagers because of the human papillomavirus that was spread by venereal transfer, in other words, sexual contact.
Right.
And it can cause venereal tumors and it can cause head and neck tumors. It's a very, very, very bad virus. Very bad. Very serious. My daughter used to work in the ear, nose, and throat department at Marshfield Clinic, and they saw a lot of patients with this, young patients with this. It's a terrible disease. So human papillomavirus vaccine became a thing. And if you read the clinical trials, it says that dying in a car accident is related to it. Well, it has nothing to do with it, except that who were the group of people that were being studied for the human papillomavirus? Teenage new drivers. So they were out in the study. The study had nothing to do with them being a teenage driver other than the fact that they were a teenager. And they weren't good drivers because they were teenagers and they got in car accidents and they passed away because of these accidents. So did the virus and the vaccine cause them to have a car accident? Of course not. But because it happened during the clinical trial, it has to be reported. So that just kind of helps illustrate something that's a really far out example of what? It's in the study. Why? Because
but I think it's also an interesting, I mean, we're down rabbit holes. We'll be back to this, guys, but down a rabbit hole on the other side.
Yep.
Talking about causation and
correlation.
Thank you. And there was another C. Wasn't coincidence. Causation and correlation, and help people understand that because it is so important. And I think an under-discussed part of science.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that is the problem, is that it can be difficult to tease those apart because they can look like the same thing. So would it be lovely to be able to say that all of these things, there's a study that I saw about people who use mouthwash are more likely to become diabetic. What? Like, that doesn't even make sense. But is it cause and effect, or is it correlation?
And,
is it just
and
these are people that
the people who use mouthwash are diabetic because they're using mouthwash because they eat too much cake? Like, whatever.
Or that they take better care of themselves so they're diagnosed with diabetes, even though it didn't cause it. It's just they may be the ones more likely to go to the doctor and the dentist, so it's being picked up that they're diabetic. I don't know but that's what a correlation is versus a causation.
Right.
It doesn't make sense that mouthwash makes you diabetic.
But I think it's an important point, and I think that it's one of the ways in which science, which is currently under attack, is misunderstood. So all things that we can do to make science less misunderstood is good.
Right. Agreed. So skin allergies, ear infections, benign lumps, vomiting and diarrhea, super common in dogs. And dogs are happy to eat all kinds of disgusting, gross things when they go out in the yard. They roll around in stuff. They eat stuff. You know, rabbit droppings are lovely in the snow because they're on top of the snow cover. They're easy to see, easy to find. They're like little Tootsie Rolls. They go out and eat dead birds and dead rabbits. And, you know, dogs are dogs. They eat grass because they want to. They like that
drink
long,
out of
tall stuff.
Filthy mud puddles.
Yeah. The big clod of grass that comes out from under the lawnmower. You know, let's not eat a few blades at a time. Let's eat the big wad of grass so you can vomit up more when you come in the house on the new white carpet. This is just what dogs do. Dogs and cats. And cats don't mind vomiting either. They're not upset. Like when kids vomit, they get very, very upset. Dogs are like,
I get very, very upset when I vomit. It isn't kids.
No, it's every human being gets upset. But it just doesn't seem to bother dogs and they don't really care and they'll eat dead stuff anyway. So big deal.
I've got one for you, since we're kind of randomly zigzagging through the rabbit holes. stool eating.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Nice word for it. Pica. Coprophagia. Yeah. And dogs will do that. They'll eat other dogs' stools. Some prefer them frozen in the winter. We call them pupsicles. Some dogs like them warm straight out of the dog. Some dogs like foreign material, you know, rabbits and deer and stuff. And we now do all of our fecals that we do on dog testing go out to a diagnostic lab. And it's pretty interesting because they are able to distinguish Imeria, which is not a dog parasite. It's a parasite of herbivores, from coccidia. So we'll get the reports back and they'll say, Imeria, not a parasite of this species, in parentheses. So when I send out the reports to client, I say, so by the way, newsflash, your dog is a poop eater. So here you go. This is fun. But it doesn't infect the dog. It just goes in one end and comes out the other, and they'll see it in the stool. But if I were to read that stool sample in the diagnostic lab in my clinic under the microscope, I'm not good enough to tell Imeria from Isospora. So that's the advantage of having a diagnostic lab with very highly trained technicians do it. So if your veterinary clinic is diagnosing coccidia frequently on your dogs and they don't seem sick, or you just want to know, is it really a dog parasite? Then you can ask them to send it to their reference lab, because most veterinary clinics do have access to a reference lab that they can send fecals out to. So just a little tip if you're frustrated.
Why do they eat poopy?
Because it tastes good? I don't know, because they do. Well,
How do we make them stop?
A reason. There's a reason.
Okay, good. There's a medical reason. I want to know it.
There is. Because when female dogs have baby puppies for the first 3 to 4 weeks until the puppies start weaning, the mother dogs have to eat the feces so that when they leave the den to go find food for the babies and for themselves, when they come back, the feces weren't in the den to attract other animals that would prey on the baby puppies. So that's why they eat feces. Cats do the same thing when they're itty bitty babies, but cats stop. Cats have some judgment when they become adults that puppies don't have. Dogs continue to do it their whole life. So it's icky and it's gross, but it's a normal physiologic thing for a dog to do. It's right up there with some female dogs will vomit to feed their puppies at about the time that they're weaning. Instead of putting gruel in a bowl and letting the baby puppies eat it, the female dog will be like, okay, you have been nursing long enough. You are old enough to start eating something solid. So they'll vomit and produce partially digested food for the puppies. So that's all just normal physiology of dogs. And we have to keep in mind that under those cute little furry lips with those big canine teeth, these are still dogs. They may sleep in your bed. They may be your child's substitute.
Not if they've been eating poopy, they aren't.
They may be your best friend, but they are still a dog. So they're still going to eat icky stuff.
Do you have a preferred suggestion for the prevention of ickiness?
Prevention or treatment, there's actually a product on Amazon called Coprophagia that seems to work the best. There's been a number of products on the market for years, and if they all worked effectively, we would not have to continue to produce them and buy them. Forbid has been on the market forever. I don't think it's quite as good as Coprophagia, but whatever works for you, you can run around the yard and put Tabasco sauce on the dog's feces if that suits you. No. It doesn't work.
My dogs thought that that was just like a condiments. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Flavored
meat.
Thanks.
Meat tenderizer and or papaya based stuff seems to work.
Accent. Yeah. Yeah. Accent. And so it
seems
goes in one end of the dog. And it's supposed to taste bad coming out the other end. And there are many things I've put in my mouth, including dog toothpaste and dog medications over the years. But I'm not testing to see if accent in your dog's food decreases the likelihood that the stool tastes good. I'm not going there.
No.
So I'm going to have to take the company's research and their word for it, because that crosses many lines for me. There's a lot of meds. There's meds when people bring them in, you know, like a new pharmaceutical agent will come to the market and the sales rep will come in and say, this stuff tastes like honey. I'm like, okay, put it on my finger, taste it. Yeah, you're right. Tastes like honey. But I'm not doing anything. I don't cross that line.
No, that's wrong. Okay, good. So there's another rabbit hole crossed off. Next.
Yes. Other things, dental disease. Very, very common, especially as our pets are aging. They have bad breath. They typically don't stop eating because of dental disease. My radiologist swears that they will never stop because of bad teeth, but it can certainly cause bad odor. It can certainly diminish their ability to chew their food effectively, and it's an unhealthy condition for your dog. So if your dog has dental disease and your veterinarian says you need a dental cleaning, do this with your head, because it is a healthier dog when their mouth is healthier. They have less kidney problems, less heart problems, less liver disease, all the stuff. So healthy mouth, very important. If your dog will let you brush their teeth, great, go for it. There's a new toothpaste that came to market on the human side about 2 years ago called Live Fresh. It has EDTA in it, which is 250% more effective in breaking down the tartar on the teeth. And I've been using it on myself and on my dog. It is not a dog-labeled product, but they make a non-foaming version. And my dog tolerates it very well. And it is a magnificent product in reducing tartar on your teeth and the dog's. But I have my own tube. She has her own tooth. I have foaming.
At least your own toothbrush.
Oh, yeah. We don't share a toothbrush either, just to be clear. Other things, bladder infections and bladder stones, really common in dogs and cats. We'll talk more about cats because they're different next time we talk about this. But bladder infections, super common in dogs. Sometimes dogs develop bladder stones secondary to a bladder infection. Sometimes they develop a bladder infection secondary to stones. So which came first, the chicken or the egg? It does require some diagnostics to know that. So that's not uncommon. And then another really common thing that we'll see is arthritis and osteoarthritis. So joint pain, strains, arthritis, badly formed joints like hip dysplasia, elbow dysplasia, injuries, soft tissue and orthopedic injuries, super common. And dogs frequently will limp. And unless they are literally three-legged lame, and sometimes even if they are three-legged lame, this is not an emergency that has to be taken care of. If the leg isn't dangling and obviously broken, and they're limping, putting some weight on it, you can wait until your vet clinic opens or until they can get you in, because that's not a serious emergency. Vomiting is a serious emergency. Diarrhea is not so much. I mean, you have to make some decisions on some of these things. And we actually did a whole six-week first aid class on some of these topics. So if you want to really get deep into this, it's already well covered in those programs.
We've got those coming up for you guys.
So those are eye infections, more common in cats than dogs. That's pretty much like the high points. Coughing, I guess we'll sometimes see dogs that come in with a cough, either from exposure to something that's irritating or picking up a disorder kennel cough at the dog park or boarding facility or whatever. And then anal sac problems. So really, you know, another icky skin thing, but not a terrible emergency. But still, you know, one of the things that needs to be addressed by a veterinarian. But really, those are the things that we most commonly see at the veterinary clinic are those topics. And some are definitely, I need to drop everything and run to the vet right away. And most of them are not. Obviously, poison ingestion and trauma, those are emergencies. But again, those aren't the most common things that we see.
Awesome. All right. Well, there you go, guys. A few rabbit holes, a few squirrels. And we have our top 10 topics. And I might add, if you're a new listener to the Marty and Laura Show, pretty much every one of those has been addressed. So go check it out. Right. Don't forget to like and follow the show. Share, leave us a review. All the great stuff, because we appreciate you guys being here.
Absolutely.
All right. Have a good night, Marty.
Thanks.
Hey, friends. Did you know that the Marty and Laura Show website has a special page just for young animal lovers? Whether your child is meeting their first pet or already dreaming of becoming a veterinarian, Kids Corner is a place to explore animals through creativity, curiosity, and age-appropriate learning. Designed for young animal lovers and their families, these resources encourage empathy, responsibility, and a lifelong love of pets. Start off with a free coloring page. That's right. A new coloring page is available regularly. Download one free and check back often for new designs. And if you love that free page, take your coloring adventure further with the 10-page Color Me Pets coloring pack for just $5. Each page is filled with adorable, breed-specific dogs and fun educational prompts that spark creativity and curiosity. This pack is perfect for kids who want to explore, who want to color, and who want to discover more about pets. It encourages careful observation, fine motor skills, and an appreciation for animals, all while providing hours of fun. Plus, it's an easy, printable download, perfect for rainy days, long car rides, or creative play at home. Artwork by award-winning artist Sandy Mesmer, the Color Me Canine Collection brings even more adorable pets and fun designs. Explore full coloring books available online through Sandy's shop link on our page. Visit MartyandLauraShow.com/kids-corner to learn more. Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog. And we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.